This is episode 26 of the Great Speech Podcast on Using LinkedIn to Build Your Personal Brand, an interview with John Esperian. Shh, listen. Ah, no children in the house.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics. From the bottom to the top, so get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Welcome back to the Great Speech Podcast, my great communicators. How are you guys doing? I hope you are well. Bring you another episode of the Communication Skills Supercharged Podcast with me, Kolarele Shonaike. You know who I am by now, but if you don't, go check me out at greatspeech.co. That's where you'll find all you need to know. Hey, listen, this week we got another interview because, you know, I love my interviews. But before I do that, actually, I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of reviewers. Of course, I love my reviews as well. This is what helps me know that actually the stuff that I bring to you each week or every couple of weeks is really hitting through to the brain. So thank you for that. Every time you do a review, I will give you a shout out. So feel free to send them in. First review is from Zine17. I like that name, actually. That's pretty cool. Zine17, who says, I'm so pleased I found the great speech. Yes, so am I. I'm a professional speaker. Good. And I feel it's important to continue my professional development by listening to top quality information provided by my peers. Thank you. Collar's podcast is helpful, engaging, relevant, just hits the nail on the head. His style is upbeat. Oh, yes. Thank you. I like to be upbeat. Pleasant. And would be good for someone who's thinking about embarking on a speaking career, a seasoned professional speaker, and anyone else in between. I have a soft spot for the introduction jingle when he says, thanks, Dad. Everybody loves my dad. After his father's jingle cameo, that's so sweet. All round, it's an easy podcast to recommend. Hey, listen, thank you so much, Zine17. I really appreciate you recommending the podcast and doing the review. It's truly appreciated. Thank you for sharing it with other people as well. I got another quick one as well from QB That's Me, I think is the way this is said. QB That's Me. And again, another, I love podcast review names, actually. I think they're pretty cool. This is short and sweet. Just says, wow, wealth of knowledge shared on communication. Amazing! Exclamation mark. Thank you very much, QB That's Me, whoever That's Me is. I really appreciate the reviews, and it really helps to keep me going. Although I'm kind of say I would do this anyway, even if nobody was paying attention, because I don't know, it's kind of an important topic for me on how we can communicate. As I always say, my mission in life is to change the way we communicate in the world, because I believe great communication has the power to change all our lives. So yeah, that's the manifesto done. This week we're going to have an interview with a guy called John Esperian, who is a number of things, actually. So he's ostensibly a technical copywriter, writing for businesses to help them create content for B2B clients. So that's kind of what he does. That's his day job. And he's written a book, a recent book called Content DNA, which is about how to create content that best serves your clients. But that's actually not why I brought him on this podcast to discuss. In fact, what I came across John from, you know, when you're looking at your LinkedIn, which is my kind of social media medium of choice, and you just constantly get stuff from particular people, and you notice that they come into your feed regularly, and then they always have loads of likes, loads of comments, loads of shares. And I was noticing this from John just repeatedly sustained, actually over a period of a couple of years, I think it was, we were connected. And eventually I thought, no, I've got to reach out to this guy and figure out, how are you doing this? Because, you know, I'm not going to shame to admit it. There are times when I will post something and goes, you know, really goes far. And there are other times I'll post something and it's crickets, right? It's nobody's listening, nobody responds, nobody seems to see it. LinkedIn sometimes gives you your view rate, I think. And, you know, you see like 22 people saw this post. And then you look at another one, it's, you know, 7,000 saw this post. And you're thinking they're kind of the same subject, it looks like. So why is there one traction on one post and not traction on another? So I noticed that John was getting a lot of great traction on his LinkedIn post. So I reached out to him and asked him if he would kindly do this interview. And he did, which he did agree, which I was really grateful on. And it turns into great discussion again, where John just shares lots of valuable tips. I like it actually because his motto, kind of his personal brand, is to be relentlessly helpful. That's what he calls it, being relentlessly helpful. And he kind of has made it his mission to just continually share great information about how you achieve things on LinkedIn, or if you're into content marketing, you know, how to write great content. So if you go to his website, for instance, and click on, there's a section on LinkedIn, you just see reams of stuff on how to use LinkedIn effectively. And we talk about some of the stuff in this podcast episode. So we go over things, simple things like, you know, how do you get your post seen by more people? He gives me his three-part formula to creating a compelling profile headline, which is super important because that is essentially all that people will see of you unless they choose to go in a bit deeper. He tells us why it's good to like your own posts, which is something I always wondered about because I sometimes do it and sometimes don't. And I always wonder, does that look a little bit narcissistic when you're kind of liking your own stuff? But he actually tells us why that's a good thing, for a reason I hadn't initially thought of, but actually makes perfect sense. He explains why company pages get far less interaction than personal profiles. He even talks about secret words that he uses on his profile, which actually helps when he's engaging clients as well. So it's kind of really full of some great, great stuff, including, you know, why you shouldn't bother with sharing posts, which is really weird again. You know, it's stuff like you wouldn't really think about, but he actually talks about what's a better way to approach and what is a more effective way to help LinkedIn share something that you like or you want other people to see. So all in all, it's a really useful discussion with lots of practical tips on how to use LinkedIn to further your personal brand. And your personal brand is super important because it's the message and the impression and the reputation that you establish in people's minds when they think about you. And that can be all the difference in whether they choose to, whether it's employ you or promote you or commission you if you're providing a service, or buy from you if you are offering a product. So really, really good discussion. Thank you again, John, for coming onto the Great Speech Podcast. And without any further ado, here is me and here is John discussing all things LinkedIn. Here we go. Okay, welcome back, my great communicators. How are you guys doing? As I said in the intro, I have got John Esperian with me here, who is going to talk to us about all things LinkedIn, definitely, but a bit more as well. He's got a book coming out, or it's just come out as well, which is going to kind of preview for us as well. So first things first, let's say hi to you, John. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you for having me, Colin. I'm doing really, really well.
Thank you. And I hear it was your birthday as well. How are you feeling?
Just last week. It's weird having a birthday in lockdown, to be honest. And after a really busy period of me just launching my book, launching my website, having a birthday without being really able to celebrate it in the normal fashion, it's been a bit weird. But I'm okay. I'm bearing up.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it? It's kind of, I mean, would you normally have had an event or a go out for something?
I'm not too ostentatious with these things, but I'm just missing it more and more now. So I think even just going out for a meal would be something spectacular at the moment. So yeah, can't wait for that time to come again.
Absolutely. Now I start all my episodes with a quote, as you know, and when I have a guest, I ask that guest to give us the quote. So can you tell us either who the quote is by and then what it is, or what the quote is and then who it's by?
Okay, well, I think my favourite quote has to be, "A rising tide lifts all boats." And it's one that's been popularised by JFK, but I believe it's an old fishing proverb, and I think the provenance isn't quite known, but it just speaks to everything I believe about trying to help others and raise everyone's level together.
That's lovely. I like that, actually. I mean, it's interesting. I have used that, but really just in a, you know, you say it and throw it out there without really thinking too deeply about it. I have to say, I didn't know that it was generally kind of attached to JFK. Did he use that in a speech or something?
I think one story I've heard is that he saw it on a painting on a wall and that attached to it somehow, and then started using it. And of course, when you've got such fame, people say, that's the thing that JFK said. This is what I've heard anyway, but I think it's much, much older than that. And yeah, I just think it's a lovely, lovely sentiment that we shouldn't be selfish, and we should just look to raise everyone's level. So that's that is me in a nutshell.
Excellent. Well, actually, let's kind of go on with that thought. You've got a book coming out right now, or it's just coming. So it's actually officially launched as the time we're recording this, right?
That's correct. Yes, it came out on Amazon at the tail end of April 2020. So yes, it's already out.
And this is the Content DNA book. So just tell us about what the book is about. And then I kind of want to ask you about that thought you said about, expressed about, you kind of feel you were here to help people. How does the book fit into that? So just tell us what Content DNA is about.
Yeah, well, Content DNA is for business owners who want to take better control over their online presence, over defining what their personal brand is and having better control over their marketing and content. And in a nutshell, it is about defining the shape of your business presence using four or five small building blocks, similar to real DNA, and then imprinting that shape on people's minds over and over and over again. So the subtitle, the tagline of the book is using consistency and congruence to be the same shape everywhere. So it's this idea of building a small, recognizable shape and then turning up and being consistent with it every single time, so that eventually you become the person of interest that's known in your industry. And that's based on 10 years of consultations I've done with my copywriting clients. And I thought, you know, it costs thousands of pounds to work with me professionally to write website content, but if you want to get all of my best ideas about how to do it yourself, I put those learnings into this book, and I hope business owners benefit from all of that stuff.
Sorry, we just got a little cut off there, so I have no idea where we were when we finished, but I'll just carry on anyway. I know the thought I was expressing was that what I noticed pretty much in your LinkedIn stuff, which is how I came to know you, which is why I wanted to ask you about that, your ethos of helping people, is that in your LinkedIn stuff that you share, what I notice is you're very generous with people in your posts. You're very quick to at or reference, you respond to pretty much everything that somebody kind of shares with you or comments. And when you said about, you know, you kind of, you're, it's almost sounded like you're here on a mission to kind of help people and give people what you've got. It sounds like you've put that passion into the Content DNA book as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I give my own personal example of these four building blocks that I've got around my business. And one of those four business building blocks is this idea of being relentlessly helpful. And that came to me purely by chance. I was speaking at a conference in 2017, and I was asked a question, and it was an unscripted question, and it was a question from my marketing mentor, Mark Schaefer, who said, "How are you going to remain relevant in a world with lots of different options?" And I said, "I'm going to keep producing relentlessly helpful content." And I hadn't planned that at all, but that moment stuck with me. I started using it in my marketing, and people started to echo it back to me. It was like a hook of a song. I would say it, and it was like a call and response. People would start saying it back to me. And I thought, I'm onto something here. And I came up with some other kind of satellite values to accompany that. But that's the central thing. And since then, I've just been kind of hammering that message in everything that I do. So not just saying it, but actually trying to live the brand as much as possible. And that's helped me to become known, specifically on LinkedIn, as being this helpful guy who puts out interesting, relevant content. And so I thought, well, other people shouldn't need to rely on luck to stumble upon whatever their brand identity is. There must be a way of them doing it themselves. So I give myself as an example, show what my building block values are, and then encourage people to think about, do some introspection, speak to people who are relevant to them, speak to their best clients, and do some other things to try and work out what their true shape is. But yes, my presence on LinkedIn is very much in service of this idea of being helpful. And it goes back to when I was studying content marketing some years ago, which essentially comes down to being the best teacher you can be in your space, so that you become what's known as the Wikipedia of your industry. So that if someone has a question, you answer it as transparently and honestly as you can, and with as much depth and, you know, with as much detail as you can, so that people build their trust with you. And I found that over several years, that's now led to me becoming a trusted source of information, becoming known on LinkedIn. And a lot of that has come from just focusing on one space, which is another message from the book, not to try and, you know, spread yourself too thinly on lots of different places, because that's what I used to do and it didn't work at all. And it's only when I really focused down on one platform and said, I'm going to be known here, it might take me a while, but I will do it. That's when the results started to come. So it's taken a while to get to that point, but now people associate me with being this helpful guy on LinkedIn. And if I can occupy that memory slot in people's minds, that's good enough, because that I'm the person who gets remembered when it's time to maybe hire a copywriter or recommend one.
So a question then, actually, like, as I said, I'm going to read the Content DNA book, which I haven't yet, which is unusual for me with these interviews. But question, though, is, why did you do a kind of, because that sounds like more a book for entrepreneurs and for businesses, as opposed to a specifically LinkedIn book or book on LinkedIn, well, you know, techniques?
I wanted something that contained lessons that would be generally applicable in the long term, regardless of platform. Mm-hmm. If I were to write a book on LinkedIn, truthfully, it would probably need to be updated in 3 months' time, certainly in six months' time. And I wanted something that had a bit more longevity than that. So my posts and my blog posts are things that can be tweaked after the fact and kept relevant and up to date. A book, I think, needs to have a little bit more gravitas to it. And so I wanted general lessons that apply to all business owners and that could be relevant in years to come, not necessarily in relation to LinkedIn. Certainly the advice can be applied to LinkedIn, and there are a couple of LinkedIn specific bits in there, but I wanted something that was a bit more overarching than that, and I hope the book has achieved that. Well, you'll have to let me know once you've read it.
Yes,
certainly I've become known as this LinkedIn helpful guy, so I try to share as many tips about using the platform well there as I can. Some very nerdy kind of go to this, click this, do this, go to this screen, change this setting. But other more general stuff are just about the way you ought to behave on social media and what things to do and what not to do. And there's plenty of pitfalls out there, and plenty of people just don't seem to be aware of them, because I get all sorts of weird approaches and see bad behaviors on LinkedIn that really turn me off.
And I am going to be asking you about those specifically. But okay, listen, the link to the book Content DNA will be in the show notes. So if you're listening to this now, you want to get hold of that, just scroll down, you'll see the link and you can buy that straight away. I think it's paperback and ebook as well, right?
That's correct. And okay. Also, I've self-narrated an audiobook, which should be out. Well, at the time of recording, it should be out in the next few weeks. So perhaps by the time this is available, then people will be able to get that. So I spent about seven. There's about 7 hours of content there for you to listen to.
It's tough, isn't it, to record? While you're
running and cooking. Yes. Yeah. So, but there's been demand for it, so I thought I'd do it through that route as well, because not everyone likes to read, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Well, that's good options. So let's move on to LinkedIn, right?
Sure.
So LinkedIn, it's my platform of choice, although I have found myself on everything else as well, just because, you know, you start and you think you have to be everywhere until you narrow down. What would you say is the value, the benefit, the kind of USB, whatever you describe it, of LinkedIn, and why you've gone all in on LinkedIn?
Okay, well, I work in B2B, and so that's where B2B customers, potential customers, tend to hang out. So that was my first reason for getting involved. Mm-hmm. But also, it's a less mature social media platform than other places, and therefore the organic reach, in other words, the potential for your content to be seen by lots of people, is still very, very good when compared with something like Facebook, where essentially it's a pay-to-play platform. Now, if you really want to get visibility, you need to start boosting posts and placing ads, and that's not my style of doing things at all. Right. I'd rather use organic reach, because I say in the book that ads are a cost, but content is an asset, and that asset will mature. You know, if you start building an estate of content, that thing can work for you 24/7. Even if you're on holiday for a month, that content can still be found and can still do a job for you. Whereas the moment you turn the tap off on your ads, that's it. All your visibility goes. Yeah. And there's no way of predicting how expensive ads might be in the future, because, you know, there's more and more competition for attention. But useful, interesting, relevant content will always be found and will always be consumed and shared and so forth. So that's my general approach to LinkedIn. And another key thing to remember here is that LinkedIn's business model is different from the other social media platforms. If you look at all the other social media platforms, what they really want to do is try and monetize people's engagement. Okay, so they want to make content harder to see unless you pay them. Whereas LinkedIn's main source of income actually is selling its premium and Sales Navigator products to high-end businesses. So while that remains the case, they don't really need to monetize the content side of things as much, and therefore organic reach is likely to continue to be good for the foreseeable future. And so if you want to create content that stands out and gets seen without having to invest a load of money in ads, LinkedIn's a brilliant place to be. Gotcha. And we're still at the point where there are, you know, just shy of 700 million users. Compared with some of the other platforms, that's, you know, there's less attention for eyeballs. So it's a great place to stand out. And one other key thing I've found is that since investing my time in LinkedIn, I've found that the customers who approach me via LinkedIn are apt to pay as much as 30% more for my services as those who approach me via Google. So in other words, when you invest in the trust building and the visibility in one social media place, you'll find that people are more bought into you and therefore are willing to pay a higher rate to get your time versus a stranger who's come in through an ad or through Google. Gotcha. So there's really good reasons to standing out there, I think.
Yeah. And do you consider it to be just as relevant for professionals and employees? I know obviously you're an entrepreneur and running your own business, but what about people who are, you know, just working in their careers and they're trying to build their careers that way? So not necessarily looking for people to come and buy from them.
No, sure. But I think the smart businesses these days will see that they'll get more visibility if they can empower their people to build their own personal brands. You know, now this is a subject of some debate, because a lot of business owners will feel nervous about trying to raise the level of their people, because their mindset will be, well, what if this person leaves? But the other side of that coin is, what if they stay and they're just not, you know, they're just not very good? That's worse, isn't it? And so I think there's a Branson quote about, you know, treat people well enough that they could leave, but they actually want to stay.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if you can do that, then by all means, you can be an employee of a company, but still represent the values of that company, build your own personal brand, and kind of everyone wins if you do that. So gotcha. I think there's plenty of space for that.
Gotcha. Okay, so on LinkedIn, let's look at some kind of fundamentals. One of the things that I know infuriates me if I get a LinkedIn request, for instance, is people who don't even have a picture, right? Or if they have a picture, it's kind of, you know, it's been taken with a smartphone, semi-dark, as opposed to a decent headshot. What do you say about that? Why? What's your approach to telling people how to deal with the photo side of things, headshot?
Okay. Well, I mean, I think there are only three bits of information that follow you all around LinkedIn. There's your name, there's your profile photo, and there's your headline. So that's the three-part thing that's with you always. It's your identity card. You can't change your name more often than not. You can control your photo and you can control your headline. So they're important things to get right. And I've seen some stats that say that, you know, people who have got a good profile photo get something like 22 times as many expressions of interest, you know, invitations to connect, responses to their content, versus the people who either don't have a photo or for some reason hide their photo from people they're not connected with. I guess there are a couple of situations where you can imagine why someone might not want to show their photo because they don't want to get all sorts of inappropriate advances. But in general, I think if you do show up and display your face to people, that will make you a lot more trustworthy and approachable. And in fact, it's one of the things why people say, you know, why isn't my company page getting very much engagement? I get engagement through my personal profile. And it's just because of that human psychology thing of people don't want to interact with a logo. They want to interact with a real named person. And therefore, company pages very often get very little engagement because it feels as though it's a broadcast. It's right. A company, a pronouncement. It's not a personalized thing. And so if you take that same approach to your personal profile and just leave a grey silhouette there, well, no surprise if no one's really interested in knowing who you are and wanting to engage with you. So getting the profile photo right is really important. And then the thing, as a writer, I say, is getting your headline right is absolutely essential. It's probably the most important bit of text you could possibly get right is your social media tagline or headline.
Yes, so tell us about that. What should we be looking to include or how should we shape that headline?
Right, so I've got a three-part formula for this, which I go into in the book, and it's based on three sections, the three I's. They are interesting, informative, and intriguing. Your LinkedIn headline can be up to 120 characters long. So imagine that's your budget. And then I set the first interesting block as having 40 characters. The informative block as having 60 characters, and that leaves you 20 characters for the intriguing block. So the first block, the interesting thing, is in a nutshell, what value is it that you're providing? What product or service are you providing? And how can you say that in an interesting way? So not just your role, not just solicitor. You know, that's boring. No one cares about that. It needs to be something that's descriptive or different, interesting. The middle block is your informative section. That's where you need to put in some keywords and things to support the interesting statement, because you don't want it to sound too esoteric. So it needs to put some context around what that original statement is. The final intriguing block, also what I refer to as a bravery badge in my book, is 20 characters where you say something that would be a conversation starter, something that's a bit different. It might be something about a hobby, might be something about a pet. It might be something that you believe in that other people don't. Just something that will pique people's interests in you. And I've got that with my profile.
I'm reading yours now, and as you were describing it, I went to your profile because I always like to see if people kind of walk the talk, right? And yours is exactly that. So I've got relentlessly helpful, which is the tagline you kind of talked about, technical copywriting for B2B websites. a LinkedIn nerd, author of Content DNA, and not a douche canoe, which is so definitely going to get me asking, what is a douche canoe?
So that is in the book, I talk about the ideal person that you want to serve. Okay, it's often referred to as a buyer persona or customer avatar.
Mm-hmm.
I like the expression pen portrait. I think that's a little bit more artistic, where you kind of sketch out this mental idea of who it is you want to serve. But the opposite of that person is also important to have sketched out, because as well as getting, you know, maximizing your income by serving the people you really want, you need to see who it is that you want to try and sidestep. So that opposite person is the poison portrait. And my poison portrait is characterized by this guy I'm calling the salesy douche canoe. You know, he's got the fake tan, the gold watch, turns up late to meetings, really entitled, doesn't listen to your feedback.
Right.
And I've kind of sketched out this guy, and I've said in my headline, not a douche canoe. So that often gets people, you know, asking questions. What does that mean? Or, you know, where did that come from? And it that speaks to really the key thing about succeeding on LinkedIn, which is to find ways to start more conversations. So I'll give you another example of something that I do with my LinkedIn profile, is that inside my about statement, which is really the thing that expands your headline, because, you know, a headline on its own isn't really enough to tell you everything about a person.
Yep.
But in my about statement, I include a line towards the end that says, you know, if you've read this bit, include this secret word in your invitation to me. What that signals to me is that you've actually read my profile, and that I'm not just another number to you, where you've just been clicking connect, connect, connect all day. And it's another opportunity to start a conversation.
I'm not going to say what that secret word is. I can see it now, but I don't want people to go to actually read it rather than just listen to this.
I'll probably give the game away, because some people often then start their messages to me with, I don't like that on my pizza.
Mm, right. Okay. Yes.
It's a silly thing, but, and sometimes people say, why did you put that in? Or I don't like that on my pizza. It's just a way of starting a conversation. And if you can start more of those, you'll really be in a good position to have a chance of being remembered. So that's what it's all about. So the bravery badge, the not a douche canoe, the secret word in my profile, and some other things that I do are all hooks to encourage people to get in touch with me and have a chat. Not a salesy chat.
Mm.
You know, I'm not interested in that whatsoever. Just a chat. And if you can do more of that in public through comments and content, and more of it in private through direct messages, you'll just start becoming slowly the hub of your network, the person that other people remember and speak to. And if you can get to that position, then naturally you're going to start getting more referrals and more direct approaches for work.
Got you. I'm looking at my profile now, I realize that my headline really is just that very straightforward. I just say I'm a communication skills coach and a barrister. Yeah. I don't give more. What I've noticed as well is very often, because somewhere in my profile, I even can't remember where, I do have a reference to the fact that I'm a West Ham supporter. And lot of times that is the opening comment that somebody will say to me when they've connected or they speak to me or hire me or whatever is, oh, I noticed you're a West Ham supporter. And then we have a kind of a bit of football chat. So it does seem that personal connection does make that difference. Yeah.
It really does. You know, LinkedIn can be considered a place of business, but we're all still humans conducting that business. And so if you've just got a hook, a way in, a route into a conversation, it's really, really powerful. So I encourage everyone to be a bit braver in what they say about themselves and just show a bit of personality in their headline and in all of their content, really. It's one of the big mistakes I see in business is that people write this really straight-laced,
sterile,
you know,
right?
It's really boring.
Yeah.
It's got no personality in it. And that's precisely what I was doing back around 2014, 2015. And surprise, surprise, I didn't have any kind of engagement on my stuff. It's only when I really loosened up, which was probably 2016, 2017, and started putting more of me into my content and I always say that I'm a jeans and t-shirt guy. I'm not a suit and tie guy. So if you want that kind of straight-laced technical writer who's got the other pens in the top pocket and a checkered shirt and really thick glasses, that's you're hiring the wrong person. You're wasting your time. So I might as well give you those public signals so you know that I'm your guy or not your guy.
Yeah.
And my content has succeeded a lot more because of giving those signals to people. I'm attracting the right kind of people with my LinkedIn presence.
Yeah.
I like what one of the people I quoted in the book, Doug Kessler, says about this. Your marketing is like a magnet. So it should attract, but it should also repel. You know, so you should consciously put out signals that you know some people are going to hate because you're just going to save yourself headaches down the line. So, you know, if you are, West Ham fan, speaks his mind, whatever other brand values you've got, put that out there because maybe someone doesn't want that and they can just leave you alone.
That's true.
And other people might just absolutely love it and be drawn to you. So think about those conversation starters and be a bit braver in sort of dividing the room and being clear about what your personality really is. I think it's really important.
And about the about statement as well, which is kind of you got a longer, I'm not sure how many characters you get for that section, but any tips on?
Yeah, you get 2,600 characters for your about statement, and but only the first three lines of your about statement will be visible before you click the see more link. So you need to think about that opening about statement section as something that needs to encourage people to click the link and see more.
Okay.
Gotcha. So it needs to include a very short statement about what your value is, who you serve, and the best form of contact for getting in touch. Because some people who are short on time, they might just be looking for your email address or your phone number, and they don't care about connecting with you, and they don't care about reading all the details. So you need to give them that kind of really short intro. But ideally, you write something as well that kind of says, okay, I need to see more about this.
Mm.
And then you can go on to, you know, demonstrating what your value is in the world. So always think, I always tell my clients to think about what problems you're solving. So not just what service you're providing, but just be really clear about what problem you're solving. And if you can make those problems clear to the client, you know, the prospective client of, are you struggling with this? Or build a picture of how you can make their life better. You know, they start from a bad point. You get involved. You take them to a better point, and you show them that transformation that you're able to provide.
And what about with people who, as I said, so I think LinkedIn. I'm not sure what the division is between people in work, as in, you know, employees versus entrepreneurs. But I know that a huge proportion obviously is people who are in the career ladder, as it were, as opposed to in the entrepreneur business ladder. Are there any differences in how they should approach their statement and their profile about page and stuff like that? Or do you still think it's the same thing? Make it personal, make it human.
I think try and make it personal and human. Think about your personal brand and try and get your values across. And obviously, you need to try and line those up with those of your employer rather than going completely off script, unless your employer's set up so that people can really be as loose a cannon as they want to be. But more likely than not, you need to try and fit into some kind of framework that they want to define for the outside world. But just make it as personal as possible, because that's what will encourage people to make a connection. Mm. All the LinkedIn profiles I've enjoyed and that I've remembered are the ones where it does feel like it's coming from a single person. You know, what one of the big mistakes is writing about yourself in the third person.
Yes.
It just feels so stuffy and disconnected. It's much better to write in the first person.
Mm.
And if you are a service provider, also to write in the second person. In other words, talking about you. You know, the balance should be more about the reader, because ultimately the reader really cares only about themselves.
Mm.
So all of your writing in your about statement and in the content that you put out should be focused on them, their problems, and, you know, the way they look at the world and how you can address those problems for them through your insights. So yeah, it's finding the balance between, you know, obviously you want to promote yourself, but if you can help enough other people get what they want, then you're going to get what you want. So make it about them as much as possible.
Got. And on your site, what I loved as well is you have this entire page on your website, esperion.co.uk/LinkedIn, where you just have a whole load of guides. Again, this is what I meant about the kind of the generosity, I guess the relentlessly helpful. A lot of guides on just different kind of micro issues on LinkedIn, such as, you know, how to share links. You say don't use the LinkedIn share button, you know, how to post documents, explaining the view counts. Really, really useful stuff. One of the things I know, certainly I always want to know, and I think a lot of people will, is there an approach to getting people to actually see the stuff that you share? I know LinkedIn is better than Facebook, which just, you know, shows it to one person unless you pay for it. But are there some things that people who want to get their message heard, whether they're an employee or an employer or whatever it is, that they can do that will mean it will generally be seen by more people?
Yeah. Well, yes, there are a few tips for that. So one of my best tips is actually not to include external links in your content, or rather not to include them directly. So this is
I saw that. Explain, please. Yeah.
So yes. So what happens when you make a post on LinkedIn, it seems as though LinkedIn takes a snapshot of what's in the content at the moment that you post it. And if you post a link to an external resource like a blog post or a LinkedIn article or anything really, what it's doing is it's signaling to LinkedIn that this post is attempting to take the reader away from this platform to another platform. It's the equivalent of going to a party and saying, hey, don't stay at this party. Come and join my party. Yeah. It's really cool and the music's better. Yeah. Well, LinkedIn's bouncers are not going to want to let you in, are they? They're not going to want to let you spread that message because they're going to lose their party. And so it's not in their interest to do that. But there is a really quite weird workaround for this, which seems to work. It's worked for the last couple of years, which is to post the content without a link, and then to wait a few seconds and to edit the post and then to insert the link. And because LinkedIn takes a snapshot of what the post was at the point that it was posted, which had no link in it, if you then go and change things afterwards, it's stupid enough to allow that to work. And a lot of people say, well, that can't possibly work. But I have tried this for the last couple of years, and I noticed almost overnight that when I made that change with my link share posts, my engagement, you know, my visibility actually started going up to about tenfold. So it was really a huge difference. So that's probably my main tip for sharing external content. Another one is to make sure that you are present to try to encourage engagement within the first hour of the post going live. So it's almost a case that If LinkedIn sees lots of people liking and commenting within a short period of something going live, it's a signal to them that it's worth multiplying the visibility of that piece of content through the network.
I see.
And so rather than scheduling something and just kind of set and forget and letting it go out there and then not being around to answer any early likes and comments, if you can be around to try and foster the engagement, that's really helpful. And also the type of content you share. So on other social media platforms, we often say that if you include an image, that's more visually appealing and therefore that will get more engagement.
Yes, obviously.
If you're talking about a platform like Instagram, you have no choice. It's a visual platform. But on LinkedIn, this is not quite the case. It's text-only posts tend to perform as well as anything else. In fact, probably better than anything else. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, LinkedIn is often used in a business setting, and so people don't necessarily want people looking over their shoulders at them looking at pretty images while they're meant to be doing professional things.
Right.
So they're more likely to want to consume and engage with text-only content. Mm-hmm. And also, because of the way that the feed is actually physically structured, a text-only post would take up less vertical room in the feed versus an image post that might be quite tall. And what that means is that LinkedIn can fit more content into the same space. And what that means is that they're giving themselves more reasons for you to stay looking at their platform and potentially consuming their adverts. So if they can only show you one post in a page and you don't like that post, maybe you'll just click away and go and do something more interesting with your time.
I see.
If they can show you five concertinaed text posts where you can see a preview of each one, one of those might catch your interest and you might want to dig deeper and stick around and read it. So it's like they're giving you more tickets in the lottery. And they just need to hook you in for that bit longer because, as I say, the more engaged you are with a platform, the more likely you are to maybe upgrade to a paid package or, you know, dive into DMs and do something, just but generally stick around. So text-only posts are really, really powerful from that point of view.
And should you like your own stuff? Because I'm never sure whether I should like my own or whether it feels like, you know.
Yeah, I think in the early days of being a content creator, I think it's a really good idea to try and give your posts as much of a boost as possible. And I think most of the boost that comes from liking your own content actually is psychological more than anything else. So no one wants to be the first person on the dance floor, right? So
right.
So really, when you read something, if you find it interesting and then directly below that post it says be the first to like and comment, some people will just put the brakes on at that point.
Yeah,
no one else has actually liked this.
Yeah.
But if you do the self-like thing, you break that message goes away. And people don't need to look at who's liked the thing. Do they just see it's been liked? That's enough. Mm. And that difference played out over time means that you're more likely to get engagement. Now, I have to be honest that my content now gets really good engagement. And so I don't really bother with that anymore.
Right.
But in the early days, I did. And I think it did help me. It's a mild benefit at most. It seems to be quite a controversial one because a lot of people think that they're going to look like they're really, you know, narcissists if they do this. But there is a psychological reasoning behind doing it. It's a logical, thought-out process. And so if someone wants to misconstrue that as you being a narcissist, well, fair enough. But I think it can work, but it'll be a mild benefit at best. You know, there are other things that you can do to improve your engagement.
And I've seen you say that commenting on a post is actually better than sharing the post.
Yes.
Which normally I think, especially with Twitter, you think about, retweeted is better. But why do you say that?
Well, I mean, the evidence bears it out because people seem not to engage with shares on LinkedIn. And so although LinkedIn themselves recommend that you share, they've said as much themselves efficiently. Mm. What you'll find is if you look at your feed and you see something that other people have shared, you're likely to see very few likes and comments on that shared thing. It's like people stop when they see shared content and they don't really engage with it. At best, they might drill back into the original and engage with that. But more often than not, they just scroll on. And so that behavior is different from Twitter. And I think part of that is because you don't see the numbers involved. So if there was a share counter on LinkedIn, you know, 243 shares.
Right, yes.
You just need to click one button.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a social proof thing around that. But LinkedIn does not expose that data. And so people are less likely to do it, I think. The ordering of what's most important, first of all, the gold standard would be commenting. The silver medal would be liking. The bronze medal would be sharing. Now, there's no harm in doing all three, but really what you want to do is comment, because commenting is that gives you the best chance of exposing that content to other people in your network. And it's a brilliant personal branding device to comment, because people in your second and third level connections have got a chance of seeing that content if it's referred into their feed to say, John commented on this. And that's where you can demonstrate your authority, your personality, and drive more people to check out your profile. So I recommend that if you post once a week, you should comment at least five times a week. Five to one ratio. So that means a lot more commenting than posting. And it just kind of leans on one of Cialdini's rules of influence, is that people will want to reciprocate. So if you're out there commenting on relevant things, over time that will come back to you, and those people will want to support your content. And if you can get enough people supporting your content, you'll have visibility for days and days, and you'll be it'll all be happy days.
What about some don'ts? So one of my personal bugbears, I was saying to you earlier that I had this very recently, is a guy who sent me, and I get loads of them, especially during the shutdown. I've had so many more LinkedIn requests. And it was just, you know, message, and it was just a sales message. You know, hi, this is what I do. This is how I can help you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I took the bait and responded, but with a kind of, hey, what part of what I do suggests that this would be? And we got into a bit of a back and forth, and it wasn't productive for either of us. But give us some, so that's my personal don't. Give us some personal kind of do's and don'ts, especially with connecting with people and how to actually connect with them if you're trying to grow your network.
Yeah, well, some LinkedIn trainers suggest that you try and connect with 100 or 200 people a day. And I just think that's completely wrong. That is not my approach to network building. I always relate network building to what I would do if I were in a room with a person. And I would not just take my business card and shove it in 100 people's hands and then walk off, which is essentially what they're recommending that you do sometimes.
Yeah. Some people do that, by the way. So,
And how many of those can you remember? Not many,
exactly.
I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's much, much better to just reduce your scope and maybe pick 5 people a day, but to read their profile, read their content, try and comment on their content if you can. That's a brilliant routine to get someone's attention, and to send them a personalized message. So if it's a really high value person that you really want to connect with, then the best approach really is not to try and connect with them straight away, but instead to follow them and look at what content they're producing and look at what groups they're in and maybe join those groups and find ways of getting on their radar before you make a formal introduction to say, hey, I'm here now, I'd like to connect with you. Because that's just that softly approach is a much better way of doing business than to jump in cold and say, hey, I've got a product for £39. Would you be interested in buying it? They don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
It's often said, you know, like and trust, isn't it? And you can't just jump straight to trust and buy. It just does not work like that anymore. People's radars are really tuned to being sold to more than ever. This is why ads don't work that well. And I think direct approaches don't work that well either. And I get that people are kind of a bit desperate, especially in lockdown time. You know, they're wondering where the next paycheck's going to come. And so they might be in more desperate selling mode. Mm. But now more than ever is the time to show your personal values. You know, so you might not make sales right now, but when, you know, this mess is over, people will remember the values that you put out now and will trust you in the long term. And if your business is set up for the long term, then it doesn't matter. You don't need to make sales right now. You just need to build trust with people. That's the great thing about content. It builds trust with people. It answers their questions, and it shows that you know your stuff and that you're confident enough about your stuff to be able to put it out there. And who wouldn't want to trust someone who puts their knowledge out for free? Who wouldn't want to work with someone like that if they could? So that's what it's all about, is just avoid the sales, extract the sales from your process as much as possible. That's how I've won on LinkedIn.
Well, I think that's definitely right. I mean, as I was saying with this particular message, I did not know the gentleman. I certainly didn't like him, and I did not trust him. So there was just absolutely no chance of that resulting in a sale. Listen, John, I mean, I could go on for ages with you, because I feel that we've only touched the surface in a way, which is why I want to encourage people to look back at your book, but go to your kind of LinkedIn guide page, which I'll put the link as well, because it's really some valuable stuff. And also, you haven't invited me to do this, but I'm going to say to people to reach out to you on LinkedIn as well, because it seems to me that you're very responsive and very kind of supportive and helpful in the stuff that you do on there.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about for me as well. I hate these kind of big influencers who just never respond to people.
Yeah.
Because how are they going to keep getting engagement? I think it's really important to honor people and recognize they've spent part of their day trying to, you know, get involved in what you're doing. The least you can do is acknowledge them and just be with them, even if only for a short period, to say thank you and to answer their questions. I think that's a great personal branding thing to try and encourage as much as possible. Just be more human. You know, if someone talks to you, talk back at them.
Indeed, indeed. So listen, I know we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to try and race through the quick fire round, which is 10 random questions. Don't think about them too much, especially because you've got less time, and just answer and kind of take it by ear. So question number one, you ready?
Okay, go for it.
Okay, if you could write a profile for one person, living or dead, on LinkedIn, who would that person be?
Oh, wow. Maybe Albert Einstein.
Oh, yes. That would be a fascinating profile. All right, good answer. Cool. Question two. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech or a presentation or a webinar, which I think you do as well?
Oh, wow. When I was 20 years old, probably 10. But these days, I've done it so often, it's maybe a 2. I'm in control.
All right, cool. Excellent. Two is low. That's right. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, question three. Bitmo John, who is your kind of cartoon character that I see you've got him nicely positioned behind you as well, which is cool. If Bitmo John could have a guest starring role in any animation series, which one would it be?
Oh, it has to be The Simpsons. Absolutely. I'm a hardcore Simpsons fan.
Yes, yes. I did a whole article on the wisdom of stupidity. 10 quotes by Homer Simpson. okay, cool. All right. Question four. Love, wealth, or happiness? If you could only have one, which one would it be?
Ooh, blimey. Happiness, I think.
All right.
But
cool.
I don't think you can have happiness without love, so
yeah,
tough.
Yeah, could be.
But certainly wealth would be the last, whatever. Yeah. Whatever combination.
Although I suppose it depends on how you define wealth. But yeah, I get that.
It does.
Okay, question five. If you had to relive one day for the rest of your life, like Groundhog Day, what day would that be?
Oh, man. God, that's really
hard.
That's the one that stumps people. Honestly, it might be the first time that I went to Anfield. I'm a big Liverpool fan, and I saw my team win 4-0, and it was just an amazing experience, and I'd love to do that again sometime soon.
That is a good especially, like, I don't even know. Are you guys going to win the championship this year? Are they going to give it to you, or is it just going to, you know, 30 years of waiting?
I think if they cancel it this year, I'm going to throw myself out the window, because it's just not such a sure thing, and then maybe not. I don't know.
And yes. Okay, question six. If you could only listen, speak, or see, which would you choose?
I guess see. I'm quite a quiet person, actually. Listening is good, but I think I'd want to see.
Okay, cool. I think that's the most popular answer, actually. Number seven, if you had to choose one track, one song to walk out to, what would that be?
Oh, so like a walk-on track.
Yeah, like, you know, you're about to take the stage, 1,000 people in front, and you want the track that kind of introduces you.
Oh, man, what a question. There's a song called Just Don't Stop, and I'm just trying to think of who it's by. I'm going to have to get the artist's name for that, because it's a few years old now, and it's not a popular one. It's not one that you're going to hear very often. It was in a Will Ferrell film. It's just such a brilliant... It's a bit of an old song, but it's really, really funky, kind of cool song. Yeah,
all right, okay.
I'm going to have to look that up
whilst we're... Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah. I saw something about The Roots, but I don't know if that's one of those. Okay, so yeah, you look that up. I'm going to carry on. Question eight. Would you rather be the world's greatest artist or the world's greatest scientist?
Oh, definitely scientist.
Uh-huh. All right, cool. Question nine. What was your favorite period of life? Kind of education, you know, school, uni, that kind of time. Early work life or now?
Oh, university was great, actually. You know, just new experiences, new horizons, new people that I'd never met before, new ways of thinking. Just the possibilities seemed endless at the time. So I think that was a really formative period for me. So I did enjoy that.
Nice, nice. And before I ask the last question, did you find the track, Just Don't Stop?
I haven't found it yet.
That's strange. I thought the Google machine would have helped us, but I couldn't see it either.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to tell you about that afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. And the final question is, which actor would play you in the movie of your life?
I think probably it's going to be Keanu Reeves, isn't it? Him in The Matrix with all those black leather and all that stuff. That's me. I'm such a I'm such a fan of that kind of thing. Matrix is my favorite film, so yeah.
I saw you reference that in one of your profiles somewhere. The Matrix, I noticed the Matrix and Westworld, and I had a question actually. Which Westworld? Is it old Westworld with Yul Brynner or the recent kind of series with Anthony Hopkins and stuff?
Yeah, I think the recent series just destroys everything. I think it's just amazing. I love that show so much. And I love the idea of, you know, who's real, who isn't real, time travel, just everything. I think it's fantastic.
Excellent, excellent. Listen, thank you so much. We literally hit your time. So I'm going to ask you a final question, which is, I am sure people will want to reach out or learn from you. Where should they go? What's the best place to find you?
Well, I've got a really unusual surname, so I think if you look up Isperian on LinkedIn, that's by far the best way of connecting with me. And all I ask is that you send me a personalised note when you try to connect, because there's nothing worse than trying to work out how people have found me. So, I just say, send me a personalised note, say that you've listened to Collar's podcast, and then we can go from there.
Yes, and go and check out his about statement as well, because there's a special word, a secret word in there that will show that you really paid attention as well. Where's Isperian from, by the way, in terms of the origin of the name?
It's an Armenian surname.
Uh-huh.
So I've got something called receptive bilingualism, which means that I can understand Armenian, but I can't speak it myself, which is a bit odd. But yes. So,
I think a lot are like that, actually.
Yeah, it's a bit of an unusual one, but it's good because it means I can get usernames anytime I want because no one else has got that name.
Indeed, indeed. So listen, final thing is I always ask my guests to say goodbye in a language. I wonder what language it will be. We'll see. In a language of their choice or a dialect or whatever, just to kind of take us out. So John, tell us the language and then tell us the word.
Okay, well, I'll give you some Portuguese, I think. There's a couple of forms, Até logo and Até mais, both of which mean see you soon.
Excellent. Love that. Okay, that is taking us out with a bit of Portuguese. Can't remember if we've had that or not, but that is definitely a good way to go. John, thank you so much for the really incredible value you've shared. I know there's much, much more, but to be honest, it's better that people come directly to you and kind of read and see the stuff that you've done and hire you for your services as well. I know you were a copywriter and things like that. So listen, thanks so much for taking your time during this lockdown. Wish you a belated happy birthday. And to all my great communicators listening, we will see you on the next episode. Cheers, bye.
Thank you for having me, Collar.
Real pleasure. Cheers, mate.